A common question that I discuss with my high schoolers, and I think something that comes across all of our minds, is why is Torah Sheba'al Peh so complex? And why is there machloket? I think I spend most of my week discussing this. And why doesn't Hashem just tell us what to do at every moment? All it really takes to answer this question is a quick look at Parshat Yitro and at the way that the people reacted to the direct divine revelation of Hashem. You might recall, they didn't react so well. At the end of the parsha, we see, and this is source number one, V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot, v'et ha'lapidim, v'et kol ha'shofar, v'et ha'har ha'shen, v'yar ha'am, v'yanu'u, v'yamdu merachok. They all saw the thunder, the lightning, they heard the sound of the shofar, they saw the mountain smoking, and they got afraid, they shook, they trembled, and they stood from afar. Vayomru el Moshe, daber ata imanu, v'nishma'a. V'al yadaber imanu Elokim, pen namut. Can you sort of be an intermediary for us? Could you speak to us instead? We really don't want to have this face-to-face conversation with God. We really fear that we're going to die if it continues this way. Vayomer Moshe el ha'am, al tira'u, ki levavor nasot etchem ba'alokim levavor tiyah yirato al pneichem levilti techata'u. We're not really going to discuss this pasuk. That could take a whole shiur in itself, but Moshe tells the nation, don't worry, I'm doing this to test you, whatever that means. Discuss it for a moment. And that Hashem should, you should fear Hashem. You should always fear Hashem. After experiencing God, there's no way you'll sin now, right? And that's why we've done this. Vaya'amod ha'am merachok. The nation stood from afar. Umoshe nigash el ha'arafel. And Hashem approached whatever that arafel is, some kind of mystical, smoky thing that I don't really know what it is. Asher sham ha'elokim, where kibiyachol Hashem was. The people were not ready to continue with this more direct relationship with Hashem. And Moshe says, don't worry. Now you'll never really want that direct approach again, but you don't need it. But you have now had a full taste of things, a full taste of how things could be. God could decide to have this very direct relationship with you for the rest of your lives, but that's not what we'll do. How are they going to be? We have to move on in the parsha to see how the new relationship with Bnei Israel and Hashem would be. At the very end of Yitro, and in the continuation in Parshat Mishpatim, answer this question for Bnei Israel. Suddenly, the first mitzvah that we're told about after Matan Torah is about the Mizbeach Adama. Continue on in Pasuk Yod Chet. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Ko tomar b'nei Yisrael, atem re'item ki min ha'shamayim dibarti mechem. You've seen the capability, the possibility that I can speak directly from heaven to you. Lo ta'asu niti Elohei kasev Elohei zahav, lo ta'asu lachem. So because you see that we can have this direct relationship, do me a favor and don't make any kind of silver or gold gods to relate to me. Rather, pasuk chaf, mizbach adama, ta'aseli, v'zavachta alav et olotecha v'et shlamecha, et soncha et b'karcha, b'chom ha'makom asher eskir et shmi, avo elecha v'erachticha. Rather, make for me a mizbeach out of the ground, and that's where you can give all of your sacrifices, and I will bless you any place where my name is mentioned, or where I mention my name. Pasuk chafalef, v'im mizbach avanim taseli, and if you do make a stone mizbeach for me, lo tivna eten gazit, don't use hewn stone, ki charbacha heinasa aleha, I don't want any swords on the stone that is used for my mizbeach, v'tchal aleha, because that would defile it. And then the last halacha that is given over is in pasuk chafbet, is a halacha that relates to tzniut, that there shouldn't be steps, rather there should be a ramp, because if there are steps, that could compromise tzniut, and a ramp would ensure that proper tzniut would be maintained. So the obvious question is why? Why is this the first topic immediately following Moshe's ascent to the Arafel, after assuring them that they would never experience direct revelation again? Before we figure out why it's here, we must identify what this Mizbeach is and what these terms and conditions are. Most Mefarshim assume that this is the Mizbeach HaNechoshet, but Ibn Ezra, in his Perish HaAroch, raises the possibility that this is an entire separate Mizbeach. This is a one-time thing. This is simply the Mizbeach that was made for the post-Matan Torah ceremony. He comes to this conclusion based on the fact that we are all well aware that throughout the Mishkan, and certainly in the Batei Mikdash, there were tremendously elaborate carvings. There were kruvim in many parts of the Mishkan, particularly on the Aron. And the Mizbach HaNechoshet was not just this simple Mizbach HaNechoshet stone. It had Nechoshet. It had copper on it. In any case, here we have a description of an entirely unadorned Mizbeach, which Rashbam and others explain is a way of ensuring that no engravings or images of God are carved into it. That's the same reason why the hewn stone would be problematic, because that would require shaping, and that, again, would create the possibility of creating idols. We also have hashkafic messages about the difference between avanim and stones, levanim, and things like that, but that's for another time. Now, though, why is this the topic that immediately follows Matan Torah? Based on the Ibn Ezra that we just discussed, it seems it is discussed here merely because that's exactly what happened next after Matan Torah, as discussed at the end of Parshat Mishpatim. But we can still question, then, why is there an interlude between of Parshat Mishpatim between Matan Torah and the aftermath of Matan Torah? Enters the Sforno, who explains to us the juxtaposition of our previous topic and this mitzvah. In source number 2, we read, Lo ta'asun iti Elohei kesef. Sforno explains, Umeachar shiri iten, she'en atem srifim le'emtzayim lehit karev elai. Now that you see that you don't need intermediaries in order to come close to me, Lo ta'asu iti ke'ela le'emtzayim. Do not use any kind of intermediaries. This was Hashem's way of explaining to Bnei Israel why they had to experience Matan Torah, even though he knew, in a certain sense, in advance, that it would be a little too intense for him. Hashem had to show them it is possible to have a direct relationship with him, even though they had not thought it was possible. Therefore, a Mizbeach Adama would suffice. But further, Sforno tells us, the Gam Kain, the source number 3, Lo titzarech lasot hechalot shel kesef v'zahav avanim yekarot l'man akrav eleichem, aval yaspik Mizbeach Adama. Once again, he's simultaneously assuring Bnei Israel, don't worry, I don't need anything fancy. I just need simple worship. I'd like to add to Sforno that Bnei Israel had also already seen how infinite Hashem is and how intermediaries, not only are they not necessary, but they couldn't possibly accomplish anything. There's a way to have a direct relationship with Hashem, even if without feeling the full revelation at every moment, the Mizbeach Adama way. No frills. We needed to know the potential way life could have turned out, and we needed to know just how direct of a relationship we potentially could have. But Hashem did take us a more natural route, the earthly approach. And this, by the way, is how I explain to my high schoolers, and to myself, whenever I get annoyed at the halachic process and all of the machloket and all of the uncertainty, is that really what we would want? We would really want this incredibly direct relationship of kolot uvrakim every single day of our lives? Because that would be what would be necessary if we don't have machloket, if we don't have this more natural halachic process. Instead, we have the ability through the halachic process to constantly be engaging Hashem, constantly have a little bit more of a relaxed revelation of Hashem. And this is potentially just as successful of a model. Then we move on to Parshat Mishpatim, which seems even more out of place at first glance than the Mizbeach Adama. We're already so used to the importance of the first letter of Parashat Mishpatim, of the little vav. But it really is a very interesting Rashi, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, but it really begs reviewing. Rashi tells us in source number 4, Ve'eleh ha-mishpatim, kol makom she'ne'amar eleh, Pasalat harishonim. If it just says in the Torah the word Ela, then that's to come and get rid of what was originally stated. Ve'ela mosif al harishonim. But if it says ve'ela, then we're adding onto what was originally given. Maharishonim mi Sinai, just as the original laws were from Sinai, af elu mi Sinai. So too are the laws in Parshat Mishpatim from Sinai. The question is, why would we assume that these laws are not from Sinai? Why would we ever have the Hava Amina that we did not receive these laws directly from Hashem? What the Vav is saying, though, is it's not just the experience of Hashem through this direct divine revelation. Don't forget that the essence of Sinai is the timeless laws that were given from there. And front and center in all of those laws is not how we serve God through ritual. It's not how we sit on a mountaintop and meditate, but rather it's through our interpersonal relationships. It doesn't have to be in the clouds. It's the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And Rashi goes on to say, V'lama nismicha parshat dinim l'parshat ha-mizbeach? Why is it that the laws of the dinim go right after the mizbeach? Lomar lecha shetasim Sanhedrin etzel ha-mikdash. And we know that that is the case, that in the Beit HaMikdash, how it was, and Emir Tashem, how it will be, the Sanhedrin sat right next to the Makom Ha'avoda to tell us that our worship of Hashem has to go hand in hand in how we treat others and how we relate to the other person. And Rav Yitzchak Twersky, in his phenomenal book, Amitah Shel Torah, does a development of this idea of the importance of Drishat Elokim, of seeking out Hashem through Mishpat, and not just through revelation. I strongly suggest you read his entire Sefer, but also specifically what he has to say about this connection. Ironically, many of us find ourselves saying, well, you know, it would be a lot easier to keep all of the mitzvot if it was through this Song and Light show, but this Parsha comes to tell us that that would not be easier, that would be a little scary, and that's not the ideal way to do so. And thus, in the very first topic of Parshat Mishpatim, the topic of Eved Ivri, we already read, this is source number 5, V'higisho Adonav El HaElohim, V'higisho El HaDelet O El HaMezuzah, V'ratza Adonav Et Ozno B'Marzeiav Avado LeOlam. That if an Eved Ivri decides that he wants to stick around and not go free as Hashem wanted, of course, why did Hashem want him free? Because we are not supposed to be an Eved La'avadim. We're not supposed to worship, be enslaved to other people. We are supposed to just be Avadim for Hashem. That was entirely the purpose of Yitziat Mitzrayim. But it's very interesting that we have this word Elohim here. And of course, when we're learning it in grade school, we get along to it and we think we're supposed to read it as Elohim. But in fact, it means Elohim. And what does it mean? It doesn't mean gods, but rather, Rashi tells us, Elohim here means Beit Din. It doesn't mean go and directly talk to God. It means go and have this very earthly judicial process through Beit Din. They shut down very quickly any thought that our law system works in any way based on ordeal. Certainly, we also believe, as mentioned before in Rashi, how important it is for the center of justice to be right next to the religious system. But there's nothing magical or mystical in the way that judgment will be decided. In this case, it's actually not even a judgment being made, since the law is clear and Eved Ivri, who wants to stay on, must have his ear pierced to the door. But other than Sota, where we do have, it's the one case where we have an ordeal in the Torah to figure out a law is through Sota, and as Ramban explains the importance why by Sota we would have that, because of the importance of Hashra'at Hashchinah on a home, and that is the one time where Hashem says, no, I'm going to have a divine intervention to make sure that our homes run properly. But the real message is here is that it's through the Hagashah, it's through the relationship with Beit Din, the approach and the relationship with the court system that we relate to Hashem. Question is why, even with that message, why would Beit Din be called Elohim? Ramban, in source number 7, addresses this issue. He first quotes Ibn Ezra, and he says, why is Beit Din called Elohim? V'amar Rabbi Avraham, ki nikra'u ha-shoftim Elohim, that the judges were called Elohim, ba'avor shehem mekaimei ha-mishpat Elohim, mishpatei Elohim ba'aretz, Elohim ba'aretz, because they fulfill God's justice in the world, and therefore they are sort of like him in this world. They enact God's law in the land. However, Ramban makes a little bit of a different approach, which actually attempts to create more of a connection between Hashem and the Shofet. And he tells us, Uladati, and according to me, Yomar HaKatu V'higisho Adonav El HaElohim, that the master should take him to the judges, but word Elohim, Ad HaElohim Yavo Dvar Shnehem, and later on, if there's a dispute between two people, with a case of Shomrim, then they're supposed to go to the Beit Din, that says Elohim once again. Lermoz Ki HaElohim Yehiyah Imahem B'Dvar HaMishpat. Not just that they're fulfilling God's mishpat in the world, but that Hashem will be with the judges in their decisions. Hu yatzdik v'hu yarshia. And in fact, it's really Hashem, kibiyachol, who is doing the deciding who is responsible and who is not. V'zeu she'amar, and similarly again in the case of Shomrim, it says, Asher yarshi'un Elohim, who God decides is the Rasha. V'kach amar Moshe ki ha-mishpat l'elokim hu. Later on in Devarim, it tells us that it's really Hashem who decides mishpat, and he gives many different cases throughout Tanakh, from Divrei Hayamim, from Tehillim, to prove that Elohim, it's that Hashem is actually coming through the Shofet to get done the Mishpat. The way in which B'nai Israel will have contact with Hashem is through the justice system. Because at the moment of Mishpat, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is revealing himself through that judgment. But here we come to my teenagers again, and any time I say my teenagers, I really have these same questions. It's one thing to say that Hashem left some minute detail about Hilchot Kashrut out, or Shabbat, and say that that's up to rabbinic interpretation, that we didn't have everything set out there. Right? We're more comfortable saying Lo Bashamayim Hi, it's not in heaven, about issues like that. It's entirely different, however, when we have interpersonal laws, in which one person will leave responsible for something and another person won't be responsible, where a couple will be asurim to each other or a couple will be permitted to each other. When we're dealing with the rest of someone's life, in our attempt to enact justice, we can become incredibly frustrated. We can think, well, there's really a case where I would love it for things to be clear. If it could be in my face, if it could be revealed to me exactly how we're supposed to adjudicate here. How could it be that God is revealing himself through justice if it is man deciding it? And it's possible, even with the incredibly tight adjudication process that the Torah sets up for us, that humans will err in their judgment. Or that because of the incredibly tight adjudication process, the Beit Din won't have the authority to make the call. A perfect example is the case of Ben Sor or Moreh, where in Masechet Sanhedrin, they crunch down on the laws so much that it becomes absolutely impossible to actually consider someone to be a Ben Sor or Moreh, and they have a machloket, but it seems to be the conclusion that there never could have been a Ben Sor or Moreh, even though someone else says, no, there was one, I stepped on his grave. But the whole point that it totally takes away the possibility of Beit Din to actually even make a decision. Well, Hashem could simply tell us, look back at Parak, remember how little we enjoyed that direct revelation of Hashem, but he could also remind us to go to the initial place where Hashem discusses retribution. After the Mabul, Hashem tells us, and this is in source. Oops, do I have on this source? Looks like this source got left out, so I'll just tell you what it says there. It says, V'ach et dimchem l'nafshotechem ed rosh miyad kol chaya ed rishenu, u'miyad ha'adam miyad ish achiv ed rosh et nefesh ha'adam. Right, was this taken out? Put this on. Oh no, it's source number 11, I think. Yeah, source number 10 and 9 are in the wrong place. I apologize for that. So this is source number 11 on page 3. Okay, so Hashem tells us, I will seek out your blood, the blood of your souls, from all animals and from man, in a case where somebody has committed a crime against someone else, and particularly in the case of murder, chas v'shalom. Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishafech, right? One who spills man's blood, his blood shall be spilled. For man was made in God's image, and therefore, when you are killing another person, it is as if you are killing God himself. And you, your job is, go and just go kids, go multiply. Don't do the killing thing, why don't you do the multiplying thing? And Rashi stresses here, in source number 12, Umiyad ha'adam, miyad ha'horeg b'mezid. This is in a case where somebody kills intentionally, the ain edim, but there are no witnesses to the crime. Ani adrosh. Don't worry. Don't think that no justice will be served. Hashem will take care of it. Miyad ish achiv. Miyad shehu ohev lo ke'ach v'harago shogeg. This Why is there the redundancy in the pasuk? Because from there we learn that even in a case where somebody, God forbid, kills somebody accidentally, he loves him, but it's an accident, ani adrosh, I still will seek out that blood. And Rashi is stressing to us that really it is only Hashem who can fully do that quick retribution, seeking out and figuring out who's wrong and who's right. We are forbidden from doing so. That is, in fact, why our justice system is arranged in this way, that makes a Beit Din who sentenced someone to death more than once is a machloket, whether it's more than once in 7 years or 70 years. We all quote the 70 years because it's more extreme, that they are a murderous Beit Din if they murder more than one person in 7 or 70 years. There's a very interesting Mishnah in Makot which discusses this, and I apologize for not bringing it on your source sheet, but after they're done discussing it, right, Rabbi Akiva says, oh, if I was on a Beit Din, I'd never ever say that somebody was chayav mita. And Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel responds to him, well, then we're going to just have murderers, because everyone's going to know that they can get off with murder, because they're never going to get accused in Beit Din of it. So there's this interesting Mishnah where they're recognizing just the ramifications of saying that we're not going to ever be able to completely fulfill this justice. But that's how it has to be, because ultimately it's only Hashem who can really know who is correct and who is not. So if the exact parameters that are set out by Chazal are not fulfilled, we just can't do it. And this happens later on in Bereishit, sort of towards the end of the story of Yosef and his brothers, where Yosef is sort of trying to punish his brothers by making them bring Binyamin down and away from Yaakov. Reuven comments in source number 13 in Bereishit, Vayan Reuven Otam Lemor, Halo Amarti Alechem. I told you, Lemor Al Tefatahu, don't do this, don't mess up like this, Vayeled, with this boy. Velo Shematzen, you didn't listen to me, Vegam Damo Hinei Nidrash. And now that Yosef is, well, they didn't know it was Yosef, now that this man, or did they, is causing us all of these problems, this is Hashem's way of seeking justice. This is the Drisha that was discussed in Perek Tet. This is Hashem fulfilling and giving us what we deserve. In fact, though, when we go back to Perek Tet, what is the way? As I mentioned before, our way of being like Hashem is by building, by having families, but deciding when life ends, unless we follow this precise formula, is not our job. We have not still fully explained how it is Hashem could be appearing through the justice system. And for this, let's just see one more source on this, which is the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma wants to explain why being created in the image of Hashem has anything to do with not killing. He explains that it's more than just telling us that we're not permitted to kill because it's like killing God, since we are creating in His image. But actually, that pasuk is also what gives Beit Din the possibility, in the proper circumstances, to judge. And this is source number 14. V'zesha amar ki b'tzalem Elokim barat adam b'dimyon salmo mahu dan b'yichidi. He quotes from the Mishnah in Avot, right? Just as Hashem can judge alone, afata tehe dan b'yichidi. You can also judge alone. Ki seichel ha'adam asher hu hashofet b'tzedek hu chelek mehaseichel ha'amiti b'rav Shmo. If there is a righteous judgment that gets forth, that is as if it's just coming down, it is part of Hashem's intellect, as it were, which is a difficult thing to fully explain, but the righteous judge acts as an extension of Hashem, since a judge is part of God's true intellect. And thus, an encounter with the justice system is perhaps a safer revelation of Hashem himself. What is interesting is that elsewhere in Tanakh, this is not the only thing that approaching Elohim means. It doesn't just mean go to Beit Din. In fact, specifically with Moshe Rabbeinu, Ramban wants to argue a different meaning. Moshe had to explain to Yitro, before Yitro suggests a different model for him, why Bnei Yisrael are waiting around to speak with him all day, every day. And now, is this where my psukim are out of order? Yes. If we turn back to page 2, and source number 8, Vayomer Moshe Lechotno, Moshe tells his father-in-law, why is it that I'm standing here all day, which seems a little bit redundant and inefficient? Ki yavo elai ha'am lidrosh Elokim. Because the people are coming to seek out God. And once again, we turn to Ramban, who explains to us that what is drishat Elokim in this context? Heshiv Moshe lechotno, and this is source number 9. Moshe responded to his to his father-in-law, Tzrichim him she'amdu alai zman gadol min hayom. They have to stand here all day waiting for me. Ki l'dvarim rabim ba'im lefanai. They come for a lot of things to me. Ki avo elai ha'am lidrosh elokim lehitbalel al choleihen. Drishat elokim is not going to Beit Din, as we could have thought based on what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing there. Rather, it's to pray for their sick, lehodiyam ma she'ovad lehem, and to tell them if they've lost something, which is interesting. Ki zeh yikra drishat elokim. Drishat Elokim is through prayer. And that's what the Nevi'im do, and he gives psukim from Shmuel Aleph and Melachim Bet to prove that Drishat Elokim is also about tefillah. And then, additionally, says Ramban, this is one line up, V'od she'ani shofet otam. Another thing I do is shvita, but that's not really what he meant, according to Ramban, by Drishat Elokim in this context. And similarly, by Rivka, when she goes lidrosh et Hashem, when she's having a little bit of a war inside of her belly, she goes to Hashem, and Rashi explains that it's, this is now source number 10, lahagib ma yeheba sofa, because she wanted a little bit of fortune telling, but Ramban disagrees. He says it wasn't about fortune telling. Lo matzati drishah etzel Hashem rak lehitpalel. Drishat Elokim is about tefillah, is about davening. Ketan derashti et Hashem ba'anani in Tehillim, I seeked, that sounds wrong, out God, and he answered me, and a few other psukim. It's interesting to reflect upon this concept of seeking Hashem through prayer, and also seeking Hashem through attempting to live justly and enforce justice. Again, these are two models, these are two modes of reaching Hashem, but neither of them needs to be kolot uvrakim. It can just be the mizbeach hadamah type. It's also interesting to think about the word lehit palel, which we know the root of lehit palel is palal, which means to judge, that tefillah is about judging ourselves. So think about that. I would now like to study together what I think is a tantalizing agadita, which will come to reflect upon many of the themes that we've explored here this morning. I recommend that everybody go ahead and read the beginning of the seventh parak of Bava Metzia, HaSocher et HaPoalim, if you have not yet had a chance, because the whole way that section unfolds is really fascinating. We are coming out of a discussion of workers' rights, who should pay for the worker's travel to where he's working, to his employee, and who should pay for the travel home, whether it's on his own time or whether he should be paid, compensated for that travel time. And after discussing whether it should just go based on minhag hamakom, how we act in just different cities can go based on different things, then they set up what the ideal Torah approach would be, and they prove very, very Talmudically, they prove the length of the workday from a pasuk in Tehillim. And seemingly, you think you really don't need to bring a pasuk from Tehillim to discuss the length of a workday, and darshan it out from Sukkim and say, no, it's this pasuk, or no, it's that pasuk, and this is how we know it. But it's a wonderful opportunity for a chazal to then spiral into a major, what seems at first like a major tangent, where they start darshaning out Sukkim to talk about the nature of evil and getting rid of evil in the world. And then they spiral into the following story, which, as you will see, will make reference to the same Parak of Tehillim that they originally started the discussion in, the Parak of Tehillim where they wanted to prove the length of the workday from, which is Parak Kuf Dalet of Tehillim, which we know because we say it every single Rosh Chodesh, the Tehillim of Barchi Nafshi at Hashem, that my soul should praise Hashem. Just very quickly, it's a beautiful parak which talks about the beautiful harmony in the world and how everything has its place and all of the animals have their place and everybody gets their food on time and the ending of Ashir LaHashem B'chayai, I'm going to sing to Hashem with my life, and it's a very inspiring, and you walk away from that parak thinking, ah, life is good. Okay, here we go. This is now source number 15. Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon Eshkach lehahu parhaguna dekatafis gande. Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon. Anybody know who he is? Ever heard of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai? His son. Remember, they spent a significant portion of their time running away from the Romans, escaping them. Keep that in mind. So he sees this guy who's working for the government and catching thieves, working for the Roman government. Amar leh, he said to him, Heichi yachal lehu, how can you get to them? Lav kichayota mitile, aren't they compared to animals? Dichtiv, as it says in Tehillim, Botirmos kochaito ya'ar, right? In the evening, all of the animals of the forest are prancing around. And then, just in case we weren't convinced from that pasuk from Tehillim that people, that thieves are these evil people who are prancing around like animals at night, Ika de Amre, there's another pasuk, Mehaikra ka Amarle, right? That there's another version of the story that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was not proving it from Perek Chof Dalet, but rather from Perek Yud of Tehillim, where it says, Ye'erav b'mistar ke'arye b'suko, that animals go around sneakily at night like a lion in its den. Dilma shakalt sadike, the shavkat rishie, maybe you have captured righteous people and you've left all of the very sneaky bad guys in the streets, because after all, it's really hard to catch them. They do most of their bad stuff at night. Amarle, this poor little worker, responds to him, Umay a'avid, what can I do? Harmana d'malkahu. It is the command of the king, the authority of the king has made me have to do this. I have no choice. I have to go catch thieves. Let's pause to just digest what we've read. We have someone catching thieves, and when questioned as to his method, he just blames it on the government. Right? What can I do? It's my job. It wasn't me. I'm not responsible. It was just the government. We've heard that, unfortunately, throughout history. I'm a paid worker. But before we see how Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, yes, the famed boy who spent years in a cave with his father escaping Romans, he's going to throw us for a loop. He first gets a little pious on us. He quotes our psukim, and the philosopher Immanuel Levinas points out that it seems entirely unnecessary. Do we really need a proof from Tehillim, as we've discussed? Hold on to that again. Amar. So now he says, here Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says, I have a better method for you, a better technique. Tag marcha hechik ta'avid. I'm going to tell you how to work, how to do this. Ol ba'arba sha'i lechanuta. Go wake up, go at the fourth hour, which is about, like, let's say 10 o'clock in the morning, to the tavern. Ki chazit inish dekashati chamra, when you see people drinking beer. The kanakit kasa biyade, and they're holding the cup in their hand. The kanaminamnem, and they're falling asleep. Sha'oli luye, ask him. It's possible that he's a little, Talmud Chacham in training, and that he got up early to learn Torah, and that's why he's taking a little break in the tavern, and he's okay. Ipoelhu, if he was a worker, Kadim Ka'avid Avidite, he woke up early because he was doing his work. Ve'avidite Belelia, and it's possible that he was a night worker, and he was Redude Redid, different understandings of what that means. One of them is really crazy, that he was making needles, that they would make needles in the middle of the night. That was their job, which sounds a little oppressive to me. V'ilo, and if not, ganbahu. This guy is definitely a thief. Tough said. Capture him. Sounds like a pretty solid plan, right? Ishtama milta be'malka, the Roman government, heard about his approach. Amru, kraina di'igarta ihu lehavi prunka. Hey, why don't we get Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who escaped us and was running away from us, to be this guy to capture the thieves. Ituya le Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. So they came before Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, v'katafis ganvei vazil. And he became an informant for the government. And it's really amazing to think about how someone was just so convinced as to the impossibility of catching the right people, sort of convinces himself that it is possible, and goes ahead and does it. And this is the same person who was so holy that when he came out of the cave the first time, he was burning things with his eyes. Seems like somewhere along the way, he became so convinced of how important it is to fight evil and to have a just society. And the difference, though, there's a very big difference in how we view the story based on whether it was the first pasuk or the second pasuk that convinced him of it. Why? As we've talked about before, Perek Kuf Dalet is this pasuk about the beautiful harmony of the world, and everything's good and everything's fine, and okay, we have these animals who prance about at night, but ultimately they will be taken care of and we have to have emunah and everything's going to be okay. But if you turn to Perek Yud of Tehillim, Perek Yud is a very different story. David HaMelech is not feeling as solid in his relationship with Hashem. He's crying out. The first pasuk tells us, Lama Hashem ta'amod b'rachok. Why are you standing from afar? I apologize, I did not put this on the source sheet. Talim li tot b'tzara. Why have you, in the greatest times of pain, you're gone. And the rest finishes in a similar vein. It's not one of those prakim where he starts out upset and ends up, okay, but I'm going to trust Hashem. We have a lot of those prakim. This is Dafka Perek where the entire time he's upset, he's pained. And here perhaps we can hear ourselves say to ourselves, maybe we should fight evil at all costs. How can we ever allow badness to exist in the world? I'm not just talking about thieves and people who destroy our entire banking system. I'm talking about people who are suffering, medical issues, anything. It's very difficult. And sometimes we feel like I'll do anything to solve these people's problems. This is not the weak worker saying, it's the king's command. What can I do? Right? This becomes a lichatchila approach. Let me uproot evil. I have to. How could I not? I have this amazing method. I'm going to do it. Not everyone agreed with his decision to become an informant. And Shalach Le Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, right? Rabbi Chometz ben Yayin, continuing on in the Gemara, right? Vinegar, son of wine. Ad Mataya Tamosera Moshe Lelokenu Lahariga. How long are you going to take our nation, Hashem's nation, and send them to the slaughter? Who is the wine? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. You're Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's son, and what have you done with your life? Shalach Leh, he responds, Kotzima ni mechalem min hakerem. I have to pick out the thorns from the vineyard, continuing on the wine imagery. I have to get it done. We have bad things. We shouldn't pretend that the Jewish community has no problems. We have to get rid of our bad guys too. Shalach Leh responds to him, Yavo bal hakerem bichalet kotzav. Let the master of the vineyard, the owner of the vineyard, come and clean up his thorns. God will take care of it. It's not our job. It's Hashem's job to do the drisha if we cannot fulfill it with the exact rules and Beit Din through due process. But Rabbi Elazar is unconvinced. Yom Echad, one day, pagabe hahu kobes. He sees a laundryman. Karye Chometz ben Yayin. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha's calling of him this very mean name of vinegar son of wine caught on, and this laundryman said, you're a vinegar son of wine. And what did Rabbi Elazar say? Midemachtzif kulehai, he's so chutzpedik, shema minei reshiyahu. He must be evil. Amar lehu tafsuhu, he told his police force, capture him. Tafsuhu, they captured this laundryman. Lebatar denachdaate, after Rabbi Elazar ben, Rabbi Shimon's calmed down, azal betray the lefruke velomatzi. He went to try to find him and let him free. Couldn't find him. Kariale, so then, what did he say about him? He found another pasuk in the Torah from Mishlei to calm himself down. He said, Shomer pivu l'shono, shomer mitzarot nafsho. You know what? Somebody who watches what they say will be watching their soul. This guy had it coming to him. He couldn't have been a good guy. If he was a good guy, he never would have talked that way to me. And therefore, he must really be bad. I must be right. Zakfuhu, they hanged this laundryman. Come to take Zakifa, he came underneath where he was hanging, the kabechin was crying. Amrulai, they said to him, Rebbe, al yirabe nachad, shouldn't be so bad in your eyes. Shehu uvno ba'aluna arama orasa b'yom kippurim. He and, not just he, but he and his son had relations with a betrothed woman on Yom Kippur. He's a bad guy. He really was a bad guy. Okay, but that makes us a little strange, feel bad, because oh no, he had this strange method of catching thieves, and he was right. Hiniach yadol b'nei me'av, apparently he was a little corpulent, and he put his hands on his stomach. Amar sisu b'nei me'ai sisu, let my innards rejoice. Umas feiko chalechem kach, if your doubts, if when you doubt whether somebody is good or bad, and this is how it turns out that you were so right. Vada'it shalachem, alacha kama v'kama. All the more so when you're sure that someone's a bad guy, you are right, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. Muftachani b'chem she'ein rimavet ho'le'ah sh'letet b'chem. And I am sure that worms will not rule over your innards. Okay? Let's see what happens there. Baruch Hashem, he does have continuing a little bit of remorse. And he doesn't feel complete. And the Gemara goes on to say, "Va'afilu hachi lo miyat vadate." He was not fully calmed down. Ashkaihu sama deshinta. So he took a sleeping draught. Va'ailuhu leveta desisa. They went into some house. Va'karu lekreisei. They, I hope nobody's eating. Cut open his stomach. Havu machumine dikule dikule detarva. I told you he was fat. They took out. I really hope nobody's eating. They took out fat from his body and they put it in the sun, betamuz v'av, in warm months, and it didn't spoil. And what it goes on to say is, well, And then the Gemara says, wait a minute, but fat never spoils, and therefore how's this proof that his Mayayim really were good and that he did the right thing? So it goes on to say that, well, in the fat there also was regular flesh, and that flesh was red, and that flesh didn't spoil, which calmed him down. And Kari Anafshe, we have another pasuk from Tehillim, Ach b'sarish kol navetach, my flesh can rest for eternity and be relaxed. Crazy, crazy agadata, makes us all squeamish, and it's strange. It's very strange. We all have our Perek Yud moments where we look at evil and we want a more direct, revelatory way to get rid of it. However, we really do have to have a more of a Kuf Dalet approach. One which recognizes badness and that things are less than perfect, but knows that Hashem is Doresh what we cannot accomplish. So no, Rabbi Elazar, we don't just decide, even if a disgusting ordeal proves us to be right. I also sort of wonder whether that was just to calm him down, and maybe he had some kind of zechut avot, I'd like to think, which allowed that to occur to him, but that really ultimately, he didn't do the right thing. There's no way to say that he did the halachically correct thing. Number one, he was a moser to the Roman government, and number two, this is just not anywhere written in the Torah that you could do this and get justice. We're not about ordeals, other than Isha Sota. We're about conversation. We use our mishpat system, and ultimately we know that it's Hashem's job to seek evil, and it's our job to seek out, to seek Him through mundane worship and mundane fulfillment of the justice system. And ironically, he tries the other approach, and somehow it works. Part of how we connect to Hashem is how we treat our workers, connecting back to the beginning of that parak of Bava Metzia. How do we treat them as ethically as possible? How do we make sure that we're not being evil in how we treat people who work for us, and that if we see evil going on, that we try to, through normal means, stop that evil, perhaps being inspired by David HaMelech's reflections on the nature of evil in this world. Just to give you a little sense of how Parshat Mishpatim continues to reflect on this theme of not having this direct divine revelation, but rather through Drisha, we see that the form really follows content. The Torah and the rest of Mishpatim reflects the idea that it's never going to be this straight-up revelatory approach, and the text is always going to be written in a way that requires Drisha and is absolutely unintelligible without it. And I'll give you two classic examples which you may be familiar with. Ironically, we're going to see it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai who does the drasha on this one. But in Shmot, we have the famous mitzvah at the end of page 3, source 16, of ayin tachat ayin, shein tachat shein, yad tachat yad, regal tachat regal, that if somebody gouges out someone's eye, then you should be gouging out their eye, and you lose a tooth, you take out their tooth. And it goes on in the next pasuk to give other examples of that. But for the sake of time, we'll just summarize. Those of you who have learned this in Bava Kamma, we learn out that no, that's not really how we do it. We do not do this direct justice approach because we can't possibly know. Maybe he gouged out a little of the eye, and then you go and you try to gouge out the eye, and you've gouged out his whole eye. Maybe in the process you've killed him. We see once again how it's the Torah Shebal Peh. We cannot read Torah Shebal Tav up straight. We cannot have this direct. There's layers there that need to be learned out. And once again, the form of Mishpatim reflects this idea as well of, don't worry, it won't be this direct revelation. And yeah, you're going to complain to me about that in the end. And then the last source that comes to prove that, and there are many, but these are two that really stand out to me, is source number 18 in Shmot Perek Chaf Bet, which is the halachot that we referred to before. We saw Ramban quoting Psukim from here because it says, Ad ha'elohim yavo dvar shneihem, the laws of the Arba Shomrim, of the four different watch guards, and we know from Chazal that we have that the first two types are, there's the difference between the Shomer Chinam, somebody who's paid to watch, who's not paid to watch your object, and the Shomer Sachar, somebody who is paid to watch your object. But what's strange about it is if you look in the Torah doesn't use the word schinam, it doesn't use the word sachar. We read in Pasuk Vav, ki tein isha re'ehu kesef ocheilim lishmor begunam mi beit ha'ish, imi metzeh aganam yishleim shnayim. If somebody gives his friend money or vessels to watch and it's stolen from his house, then if the thief is found, then he pays double, im lo yimetzeh aganam. But if the guy isn't found, then yikrav ba'al habayit el Elohim, they come to the Beit Din, and he has to prove that he has not stolen it himself. Then you have to go to the Beit Din, and the Beit Din will decide who is responsible. And then in Pasuk Tet, we read yet again, if somebody gives his friend chamor oshor oseh, an animal to watch, and it dies, or it's broken, or it's captured and nobody sees it. So then there's a different thing. Those are the cases where he can have a shvu'ah, but in a normal case where it just got lost, the Torah goes on to tell us he doesn't pay. What's confusing is that seems to contradict the first section where it says, oh, just go to Beit Din, you'll take a shvu'ah if you lost it, and all is well. So without Torah Shbal Peh, which distinguishes between, says the first case is a shomer chinam, oh, because you're not being paid to watch it, in which case there's a lower level of responsibility that we're going to have for that shomer. And the second case, the shomer sachar, you're being paid to watch the object, we're going to expect more out of you. So if it gets lost, you are going to be responsible, but if it dies, then we'll let you off the hook. Without Chazal telling us that it was a shomer chinam and a shomer sachar, we'd be lost. We'd just be like, this is a contradiction. I don't understand. It just said he's responsible. It just said he's not responsible. What's going on? So, once again, we could question why it is that the Torah didn't just write it in there. Why didn't the Torah just put it in there? This one's talking about when he's paid. This one's talking about when he's not paid. Ramban tells us you can sort of figure out from the text itself that it's talking about those cases. Because after all, we assume that if you're just asking somebody to watch your iPod, they're not going to ask you to pay them to watch it. But if they're watching maybe your car, right, or your donkey, you might be paying that person to watch it. And therefore, we can assume that the first one is a shomer chinam and the second is a shomer sachar. Even so, I think this is a perfect example of how the Torah says, go learn Torah. That's how you're going to get to me. Go do the drisha. Go uncover. That's going to be the way in which you get to relate to me in this world. I think as we are coming upon Purim, a chag where we really celebrate seeing Hashem's hidden hands, we can see the blueprint for this worldview in these parshiot, in the movement from Har Sinai to the command to make a Mizbayach Adama to the basic laws of criminal cases. A basic blueprint that shows us that we will not always have the opportunity to see Hashem through the momentous, but we sure do have daily opportunities to see him through the mundane.